Thank you for tuning into the VF One Show with VF and Vincenzo, the podcast that discusses all things business, marketing, politics, and government within the world of Formula One. If that's your thing, then you found the right place. So without further ado, it's lights out and away we go.
Welcome back to the show. Feels good to be recording this once again. I'm Vincenzo Landino. On the other side of the line is VF, the original OG VF One. And we are back from a nice long hiatus, but we are excited to be here. Excited to be here. What's going on, V? Tell me, what's new in your world?
Not much, really. I wish I could say that there's like some crazy thing event happening in my world, but there's just no thing or event happening, except for the U.S. Grand Prix next month. I'm excited that my hometown gets to host that again for another year.
So you're going?
I'm going.
Yes.
I'm going to Vegas, too.
Get out. That's awesome.
That's going to be exciting. So.
Okay. You thought shocked you didn't tell me that ahead of time, but whatever. I'll do it.
Yeah. I'm excited to see that. I mean, we know what Vegas is, but to see Vegas on that scale with that many people there is going to be another dimension. And I've been to EDC Las Vegas, so I'm used to Vegas on like massive grand scale. This is going to be next. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's like almost like the hype is, it's, I don't want to say it's died off. I feel like it's the calm before the storm. That's the phase we're in right now because, obviously I'm happy that I got to sing the Italian national anthem for the first and likely only time this season. You know, I thought Sainz raced brilliantly. I thought that the race from top to bottom was excellent. There was some good stuff that happened across, you know, like we saw Liam Lawson knock out Max Verstappen in quali two, which is wild, right? We saw Liam finishing the points. Like that's awesome. And especially in the cars that you just don't normally expect to do things to kind of shake it up.
Yeah.
We're able to do that. Like I said, very excited and I'm happy that happened. Part of me though, the competitor in me, the pure racing fan of me, it's like, I want to beat somebody at top of their game. I don't like that it was like, oh, we won, but Max wasn't even in the race.
Yeah.
Right. That kind of sucks. Go ahead.
I was going to say, but at the same time, I feel like Mercedes' strategy of allowing George to stay ahead of Lewis prevented that hard racing from happening, especially in the last couple of laps.
Lewis was definitely trying to steer towards the end.
Lewis had the pace that I think that would have made a significantly better last couple of laps, for sure. So that...
Yeah, I mean, you know, definitely a mishap.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's definitely a mishap. I don't know what the reasoning was. I haven't had time to like go in depth on what happened. Cause also I was just so damn excited that my team got a win that I was like, I'm happy. I don't need to dig any deeper. Like I am very content with this. You know, I loved the fact that we had some sort of, okay, so Mercedes has mediums left. Ferrari doesn't have any left. You know, they only have softs. They're not going to switch. They're going to stay on. Like, but it also wasn't a case of like, oh, well, Ferrari made a bad move staying out there. It was like, that was really their only option. So it wasn't one of those situations where you're like, oh, man, bad strategy, poor strategy. Like, even Mercedes' strategy wasn't bad. They, you know, sticking with George. Again, I don't know if that was the bad move. I think it was because I thought Lewis was faster.
Yeah.
But the fact that they played it so perfectly, we're going to switch to the mediums. We're going to pit. We're going to make the pit because we know we are absolutely going to gain this time back. And I mean, that was for 20 laps at the end of the race. It was like, it was gripping.
Yeah.
But, you know, are the Ferrari's tires going to hang on? is McLaren, you know, is Lando going to be able to make a move here? Is Mercedes' strategy actually going to work? Are they going to be able to make up this time? And they did. And it was like, oh my God, as you're watching, you know, 13, 15 seconds, whatever it is, turning to a second, 8/10 of a second, you're like, oh my God, this, the payoff, it's gonna happen. But it was exciting, even though I didn't want it to happen, and I'm not unhappy that George fizzled out, right? Like, it kept me at the absolute edge of my seat, and I was ready to respect and accept that the maneuver worked, and like, that was good. Like, I was ready to say, okay, hey, we're gonna sing the English national anthem, and it is what it is. Like, I was fully. But as a racing fan, I'm like, okay, that's cool. Like, that is how races. That's what we should have every week, because that's exciting. To me, that was the epitome of the pinnacle of racing, not the stuff we're going to see, you know, when Red Bull is at the top of its game. So,
yeah, I'm proud of Ferrari. That was exciting. I'm proud of Carlos Sainz. I think that was one of the races. And again, because Max has won, what, 10 in a row? That's insane. Yeah. And I mean, we keep witnessing history over and over and over again. It seems like every single season there's like major historic milestones. But you gotta imagine like what Carlos Sainz must have felt crossing the line, thinking, I just broke the red streak.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's got to be pretty.
Yeah.
Former teammate, right? Yeah. They were former teammates to Toro Rosso. And I don't know. I love that, like, the radio calls that we got from that race, you know, where they're telling him, hey, Lando's behind you 8/10 of a second or whatever it is. And he's like, yeah, that's on purpose.
Yeah.
I mean, what's that? You know, that meme, the little gangster meme where the sunglasses come down with the cigarette in his mouth? I'm like, that's what I felt like that was. You know, that moment it was for Carlos, like, oh, this guy just totally went there. I mean, whether it was on purpose or not, I'd like to think it was, because that's impressive.
I think it was on purpose because they knew they were having faster tire degradation than that Mercedes was gaining on them. But I don't.
True.
I don't think that George would have been able to do it. Lewis, on the other hand. But here's the problem with George. It's like, you talk about how many times he makes mistakes. And does he learn from those mistakes? Maybe yes, maybe no. But he makes such critical mistakes at such critical times. And here's the thing. It's like he saw Lando kind of clip the wall. And he did the same exact thing Lando did. So was he racing his own race, or was he just following Lando? And
well, so you bring up go ahead. Actually, go ahead. Finish your thought.
No. I'm good. I've got it. Nope. Go for it.
No, I was going to say, so like as a... So it's interesting because we're not really factoring in Lando into any of this equation, right? We're not really factoring in, you know, could they have passed Lando? That I guess that's question one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would George, and then, I mean, obviously Lewis couldn't if George didn't, right? So let's just say George, but I'm not discrediting Lewis. Whoever was in front, it was George in that case, so we'll say George. Could George have passed Lando at any point? Like, did he? And if he didn't, or which he, you know, he did not, but why didn't he? Was it lack of, like, just going for it? Or was what Carlos was doing effective enough to keep him at bay? Like, what was it? If they let Lewis go, would Lewis have been able to break that? You know, because Lewis probably would have been able to break the DRS train that was being created, essentially.
Yeah.
If we believe that he was that much faster. So, like, what do you think? Do you think that George should have been considering, you know, working more with Lewis earlier on to let him go? Or are you, as a fan, okay with George making the decision to run that race the way he did?
I think it's very clear right now that Mercedes' strategy to just let George and Lewis kind of deal with it on track isn't the right move, because you think about, again, how many times George messes up in races, whereas you have a 7-time world champion in Lewis Hamilton, who has proven time and time again, including crossing the finish line on three wheels that he's capable of handling a race. He's capable of calculating things that maybe George is a little, you know, still a little green on. And so I think that if Lewis was able to pass George, if they said to George, hey, look, Lewis has the pace, you don't, let him go in front of you. First off, I'm not sure that George would have listened to the radio call. I think George is
maybe not. He's
going to race his own race. I genuinely think George does what he wants and the team works around that. And that makes a lot of people upset from time to time, which, you know, rightfully so, but he's trying to win too. I'm not trying to like disregard that. That's the objective of the sport. But when you know your teammate has the pace and you don't, and you're clearly trying to follow the car in front of you and you're trying to race their race.
Yeah.
Are you in control of your car or are you not? Because that maneuver when he went into the wall, that said to me, I don't have control over my car. Because through there, Lando, you had George, you had all the drivers go through that same corner and none of them made that mistake.
Yeah, but let me ask you this, and I'm not making excuses. This is just devil's advocate, but it was just a mistake. You know, it was a mistake, and I understand what you're saying. Like, okay, he makes a lot of mistakes or whatever. I don't. You know, obviously, I'm not sitting there analyzing all of his mistakes. So if you're telling me he makes a lot of mistakes, then he makes a lot of mistakes, and I'll keep it at that, right? But is it more because you feel that like Lewis got screwed, or do you really feel like George ruined the opportunity to maximize points?
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel, because I think that if he hadn't been following Lando the way he was, if he chose to race his own race, if he looked at the data and said, yes, Lewis is faster than me, I need to let Lewis go, they would have finished third and fourth. George would have finished in the points, and Mercedes would have gotten significantly more points than the constructors. He screwed his team with that.
Yeah.
So when you,
I think my thing is like,
I've got a problem with you.
Yeah. No, and I mean, listen, the fight for second in the constructors is definitely on between, like, that might be the best race that we have the rest of the year is Ferrari Mercedes and who's going to get that second place, which we all know is so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the question I was going to ask you was, I've seen so many people on Twitter. And this is not just after this race, but in general, just genuinely complaining about George and Toto, and Toto should be fired. He doesn't have control over these guys and, you know, all this stuff. And I'm just like, this is the same guy that won 8 championships in a row, Toto Wolff. How do you have the gall to say that he's the problem and should be like, you know, I don't know. Because to me, if there's anybody that's run a better ship than Toto Wolff, like, I don't know if they exist, right? It's like, I think he's run an absolutely incredible team. So to see things like get rid of Toto. Now, of course, these are all like fanatics that are just, you know, they're just trying to be crazy with some of the stuff they put out there. But there's a lot of like Mercedes fans that genuinely are like, Toto's screwing Lewis on purpose and he just wants, you know, George to win or whatever. And it's like, do we really believe that? Or are we just saying that because Lewis is not?
Yeah, I think there's kind of a mix of several different factors. And I have seen some really weird comments. I saw some guy say that Toto is trying to kind of push Lewis out of Mercedes because
I just signed him to another contract.
Yeah, right. But this person said that their speculation to that was because Lewis is getting into that territory where he could potentially become this astronomically paid driver, and that Mercedes doesn't want to pay for him anymore. And I'm like, what kind of like logic is that?
Don't believe it at all. Yeah,
that's insane. I think
that's someone who,
yeah, maybe a new fan, I don't know, but it's crazy to say the things that people are saying about Toto. Now, I will say this, I understand if at the beginning of the season, you're letting your driver claw it out. You're saying the best driver is going to finish on top in this team. And, you know, that's how it's going to be. I get that. But when you're getting to this point in the season,
yeah,
where you know you have one driver who has significantly more points, I think it's like almost like 90 something points more than George Lewis has.
Is it that much?
I think so. I thought it was
I'll pull it up. Go ahead.
And you're now competing with Ferrari for second in the constructors when everyone thought that that was going to be Aston Martin's, you know, what, a handful of races ago? And it's such tight margins right now that you know you have a driver you can rely on. He is reliable and he is good. And, you know, he hasn't hit his peak yet. I genuinely don't think Lewis has hit his peak. I think that if he still had the same mechanisms in place that he had in 2021 and 22, I think he would have had a competitive year that year. But
yeah,
it's insane to me that at this point in the season, you know, every other team seems to have their driver one and driver two. And you know who those drivers are. That's like Williams prioritizing Alex Albon over Logan Sargeant. Obviously, they're going to do that. You know who the number one and the number two is. You know who the number one and the number two is at Ferrari right now. You know Red Bull. You know who these people are on these teams, maybe with the exception of like Haas. But for Mercedes to not declare that and have people know that Lewis is our priority because he's higher in the drivers and he's consistently reliable enough to get us more points in the constructors, that's kind of where I have my criticism of Toto. And I also will say this, that them not showing up to support him the way Ferrari and McLaren were supporting Lando and Carlos, that made a lot of people mad too. And people are not giving Mercedes for that right now.
I think people just need to read into anything. And, you know, from what I saw, and I talked to a few people on the ground, so to speak, that were like, it was nothing like that at all. They were trying to, they were working on some things with George's car because his car was like out of fire, whatever the hell it was. And it was like, they were trying to, I guess it was just like unfortunate timing more so than like, oh, we're slighting Lewis.
Yeah, but the comparison was, this is now the second time Mercedes has done this.
I'll go one further. Lewis has won how many, or been on how many podiums at this point? Like, a podium for Lewis is not the standard. Yeah. The standard is winning. And maybe it's just, and I'm not making excuse for Mercedes. I'm just maybe providing another angle where, like, you know, hey, this guy is, you know, winning is the standard here. You know, that's what we celebrate. We celebrate wins. We're not celebrating podiums. Not for a guy who's won 100 and, you know, God knows how many of them, 106, 100, or maybe more, 196, whatever he's got for podiums now.
It's almost, yeah, I already know that.
Right? It's like, okay, it's another day at the office for Lewis.
Yeah, but at the same time, it wouldn't have been another day at the office if George had finished ahead of Lewis.
But George hasn't done shit in his career either. Yep. So why aren't
we obviously prioritizing Lewis right now? And I think, again, out of Mercedes fans, that is my biggest issue right now with Mercedes. I have no problem with, you know, from race maybe one through, I don't know, before the break. You want to let your drivers have it out, let them have it out. But after the break, you know which driver has the potential to earn the most points and get their team in the best position for the constructors, and you know which driver doesn't. And right now, that is Lewis. This is what I don't understand about Mercedes. And I think, like, from an outsider looking in, you're like, oh my God, this is drama. But for a Mercedes fan being in, it's like, damn, we look like a bunch of amateurs right now. This is stupid. Like, get it together. That's all I have to say to Mercedes. Get your shit together. This is painful.
Speaking of someone who should get their shit together, Logan Sargeant. Can we talk about the Logan Sargeant experiment?
What are your thoughts?
I mean, I think it's as plain as day that you've got someone like Liam Lawson who is probably not going to have a C next year, And in the very short period of time that he's been on the grid, he's performed really well. In a crappy car. It's not a good car. Arguably, he's done it with far less training or anything, right? Like,
yeah.
Not, I don't want to say training, practice. Like, Logan's had all season. Liam had to jump in and fill in. I like Logan Sargeant. I like him as a, I don't think he's a bad driver, but unfortunately, this is the pinnacle of motorsport. And not being being an okay driver is just doesn't cut it. He wasn't impressive in Formula 2. He finished fourth. I mean, that's not to say I could do better, but there's champion guys that have won these lower divisions that don't have seats, and yet he got an opportunity, which is fine. There's reasons I get. There's business reasons for that, but yeah, I mean, he's failed to really be impressive. Really, I was looking at, and of course, someone's gonna probably tell me I'm wrong, but I look at the season standing. I think it was something like, I'm pretty sure he's, I gotta look back at his DNFs now before I say anything, but regardless of what it is, he's just failed to impress. And even at times where you're like, okay, this should be an opportunity, or Alex Albon has really turned it on at a race like he did, I think it was, where did he finish seventh? Was it? Oh, in Italy. He finished seventh. Italy, he finished seventh. Finished eighth in Zandvoort. Eighth in the points of Silverstone. In the points in Canada. And he did finish in the points the first race of the season. But, you look at Logan and it's like, he's got two retirements, two last place, 14th, 13th, 17th, 18th. It's like, I don't know. I know I'm just looking at this, but I'm also looking at the kind of the eye test when I watch him race. I mean, there's nothing that's, you watch and you're just like, oh, wow, this guy is going to make strides here. I'm also, if let's look at the marketing perspective of things. It's like, has he moved the needle for the United States market that a U.S. driver was supposed to, like we thought a U.S. driver would do?
No.
Like, I haven't heard people saying, oh my God, I'm watching Formula One because of this guy, Logan Sargeant.
Yeah. Well,
that's kind of where I'm at with it.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here and say that.
Please.
We haven't had an American driver since, 2015? And I think we want to compare him to Alex Albon because they're obviously teammates. But I don't think that's a fair comparison because Alex Albon had his debut with Toro Rosso in 2018? And then he was demoted from Red Bull. He didn't perform. So
fair.
He's been in the sport a hell of a lot longer. He has been through Red Bull.
Then let's compare him to Piastri.
So, right. I mean, we could compare him to Piastri, but maybe it is the car. I don't know. It's hard to do an apples to apples comparison of like first year rookie drivers between Williams and McLaren, because obviously McLaren has a totally different car compared to what they debuted in that preseason testing.
Well, sure.
They have made the upgrades. Williams is still crawling at a snail's pace. But also, I think right now F1 is in this weird space where younger drivers, rookie drivers, seems to kind of be where teams are now starting to pull their talent from. And they're not necessarily holding out for the marquee drivers, the drivers who have won, the older drivers, et cetera, to become free agents, essentially. They're not really waiting for that. And so if they're going to be taking this rookie talent and saying, hey, come up from F2, for example, where maybe they are a champion in F2, maybe they are finishing off podium or just slightly off, are you going to be inclined going to F1 knowing that you could potentially be fired after a year? And I think that is kind of where they're in a really weird space right now, Williams, because do you pull the plug now or do you basically say to these rookies, say you know, Filip Drugovich does, you know, they are in contact with him. Maybe they say to him, hey, you know, we're going to give Logan another year to see how he evolves, and maybe even a half a year to see how he evolves. I think that would be a better play by Williams than to simply say, all right, Logan, you sucked. We're moving on from you. Goodbye.
Well, we have a direct comparison this year to Nick DeVries, and that's probably not even that fair of a comparison, because I think Nick also had more experience. Well, maybe not. I mean, I think him and Nick are, that's pretty level comparison to some extent. Like, I don't know. They gave him how long? 10, not even, it wasn't even 10 races?
Yeah.
Did DeVries get?
Yeah.
I mean,
I thought.
You don't cut it. It's, I'm not saying that it's a sport where, like, you can't get better as you go, but how, you know, as a team that's competing, you know, every millimeter counts, can you really afford to not have the absolute best that you can get out there at all times, right? Because every point counts. So, you know, Williams not finishing in whatever place, right, is gonna cause them to lose money. So they're in seventh place right now, with 21 points. They're 9 points ahead of Haas.
Yeah.
But, you know, reality is, if Logan scores, I don't know, 10 points this season, okay, it probably doesn't do them any good. You know, they're still 60 points behind Alpine. So, like, I guess I kind of throw that out the window. But so seventh place is really the best they can do anyway. But if seventh place is the best you can, you know, the best you can do out of your competition there, you know, from the bottom four, you know, you want to make sure you are at the top of that. You want to make sure you're seventh, so you're making the most amount of money you possibly can. You know, Haas can pass them. Alfa Romeo could still pass them. They're not that far behind. So, you know, you're losing millions of dollars.
Yeah.
Every point you're not scoring.
But at the same time, hold on. Vowles wasn't in his first year with William,
uh-huh,
and they weren't having this, like, whole new principle perspective, all these things that James Vowles learned from Mercedes and is bringing over to Williams. Maybe if they weren't in the first year of that, maybe if they were in the second year of that and they really had everything in place and they, you know, they had a system going, I would be more inclined to be like, yeah, he's not cutting it. Like,
I'm happy to give him another year. I mean,
but yeah,
it doesn't bother me. Like, I'm happy to say, give the kid another year. He deserves, yeah. You know, I don't want to say deserves, I don't,
but
whatever,
it,
but
here's the other thing too. It's like, if Williams is going to cut Logan, then the ideal thing right now would be, who is a driver that has the potential to get us in the midfield? Is that a rookie, or is that trying to bring in someone else? And I'm not sure who that
person. I don't know who's going to want to drive for them either, though.
Right. But, you know, I think that, how many options do they realistically have? So.
Yeah. Again, I don't disagree.
Is it going to be a lateral move if they cut him after a year and say Drugovich can't perform either? You know, I think there's too many what ifs, and
yeah,
I hope that Logan is able to finish all the races the rest of the season, and two, he's able to kind of prove that, yes, I'm learning the car better, I'm learning the tracks better. And it's also track memorization. How many of these guys have the track memorized? Of course, I will say Liam Lawson, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't have the tracks memorized, and he's nailing it, but no two drivers the same. So,
I don't disagree there, but yeah, when you do have during the same season,
yeah,
you're looking at Liam Lawson, you're looking at Nick DeVries, you're looking at Oscar Piastri, and you look at the outcomes of all of these,
yeah,
folks, and Logan Sargeant. So you have four drivers very similar. Like, it's to me, it is plain as day to see the difference between a Piastri and a Sargeant,
yeah,
and a DeVries and a loss, and like it's very clear. It doesn't. You don't need. You know, I'm not sure you need 24, 48 races. You know, two seasons like you're suggesting. You don't need that to see that someone's,
yeah,
got it or not.
Right.
So, and again, 2 years. That's a lot of time. And 2 years is, in a team like, you know, Williams, is effectively almost three or four, because now when you have to go to another option, you're going to say, okay, let's give them 2 years, right?
Yeah,
so
true.
That's 4 years of development, 4 years of planning, 4 years that you're like basically like punting on if you don't have the right person in that seat.
But I will say this. There are a lot of teams right now that have expressed they're a little more averse to rookies right now because of the DeVries experiment. And
yeah,
so I think that is weighing on a lot of teams' minds right now if they're looking at moving on from a driver, i.e. Williams and Logan Sargeant. Like, are they going to say, okay, well, we can fire Logan, essentially bring in maybe Filip Drugovich. And okay, well, what if Filip Drugovich performs shit in F1? I mean, he's the F2 champion, but can he perform in F1? So it's the same experiment over and over again, and you're just kind of hoping for the best.
Yeah.
But it's like, again, do you move on from someone who understands how your team works, understands the car, is trying to help you develop the car to fit them maybe? Or do you completely abandon ship and start over with someone else and also make yourself, your team, look like the team that, hey, if you are a rookie driver, you know, when maybe Albon's contract is up and he decides to go to another team, you know, who are they going to bring in again that is going to trust their process?
Sure.
You're always going to be, you know, watching your back as a rookie driver thinking, well, is this going to be my last race? Like, what are they talking about behind my back? And that's not a good, I think, culture to have as a team. So there's a lot of moving parts within that. I see your perspective and I also see that perspective. And so it's a strange predicament right now.
Yeah. And I guess my, you know, where I look at it is I'm kind of at the point where I see it as, hey, this is Formula One.
Yeah.
Like you can't be like, okay, you have to be the best. There's only 20 seats. The sport is it's kind of always been like this, where it's been pretty like dog eat dog. I mean,
yeah,
it's not new. Like here's the thing, you're not going into motorsport and car racing, right? And being like, oh, this is going to be simple. I'm going to be able to, you know, mail it in. Unless you're like a Lance Stroll, right? Where you've got daddy's money and this and that.
Yeah.
But, you know, but like, does that kind of make my point a little bit more, or not make my point, but does that help my point? I don't know. But I think it's like, you don't take this path of Formula One specifically to think like, oh yeah, they're going to give me 3 years to figure it out. Like, they're really not. I mean,
yeah.
Even historically, like, where do you see, I mean, and there probably are situations, so like, I can't think off the top of my head right now. You know, there probably are some situations historically, but, you know, right now where, let's talk about the business side of things. Valuations are important. The marketing aspect is important. The media aspect of this thing is important. Like, all this stuff, there's so many eyeballs on Formula One now, more so than there have been. Like, there's less of a margin for, we can have a couple bad years.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out. You know, I'm not suggesting that a driver gets canned after, you know, a few, the DeVries thing sucked, but it was also clear he just didn't have it. Like, something wasn't there. But I'm not suggesting that that's the ideal path for all teams to take. I think it's just, you have to realize what's at stake each and every year. You as a driver have to realize what's at stake every race. And yeah, you know what? We hear about drivers driving on the limit all the time. We hear, you know, that's a phrase we hear constantly.
Yeah.
And it is. It doesn't matter if you're Lewis Hamilton. It doesn't matter if you're Liam Lawson. You've got to be driving at the limit at some point. You can't coast. It doesn't work in Formula One. You can't lay back ever. It just doesn't, you know. It's not the way you do things.
Well, would you rather have a driver full send it into the wall, knowing that, okay, you might have just cost us $500,000 in damage. Not really, but exaggerated number. But we respect you because you went for it. Or, well, we don't, you might have brought the car home, but we don't really respect you because you didn't make any racing moves. That's the whole point of the sport.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's definitely a toss up, I guess. You know,
especially in the cap era. We always kind of go back to the cap. Is it helping or hurting? And it's like, I think you're having drivers have to make that decision right now to be more risk averse because of the
cap. Yeah.
Especially with what Gunther Steiner said about Mick Schumacher. I'm sure that's on a lot of drivers' minds right now. Like,
oh yeah, 100%.
They're right. They're not wrong. Like, I am costing my team X amount of money. That sucks. But at the same time, I want to drive. I want to race. And sometimes things just don't go my way. You know, that's something we have to think about too, with any driver. But I also think that Red Bull has a reputation of being cutthroat. Everyone knows if you don't perform in that car, it is going to be musical chairs where you end up. And they have no problem. I mean, we saw with Albon and Pierre Gasly switching up mid-season. We know how cutthroat they are. Does Williams want to follow down that path? I don't know. It doesn't really seem like it's...
I'm not suggesting that Logan gets caught now.
Yeah.
You're far enough into this season to say, like,
yeah,
there's not anything happening here. But I guess I'm less impressed by how little, or I'm less impressed, if that makes sense. I'm not impressed by how little they've leveraged this whole, I mean, maybe they have, and I haven't seen it, but I just haven't seen the whole, like, American driver. It hasn't hit as hard as I thought it would, you know, considering that there was a lot of people asking for this, calling for this, like, oh, we want more, you know, an American driver is really going to change. I mean, I was one of those people who thought, like, an American driver would really change the game for how the sport was being promoted, especially in this country. And it's just like, it's not, I don't see it.
Yeah, it hasn't been.
I just don't see it. So if Logan was driving like Alex, let's ask this question. If Logan was putting up points like Alex is putting up points, Alex is not like, he's 13th in the driver standings.
Yeah.
He's got a reputable, he's got a 21 points. He's doing great. And he's had some good drives. He's had some awesome moments. Like, that is what I would say is, like, the absolute minimum thing that he could do, right? Logan, is if that was happening, would it be a different story? Would we be hearing, like, oh my God, American driver, he's going to be incredible. He's going to, like, this guy is the next thing. Like, would we be hearing, like, there's really nothing to promote. You can't promote. It's, oh, on track, he's lighting it up, he's doing great. The only thing he's lighting up is those cars. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where that's coming from. So I guess that's where I'm just not impressed, right? I'm disappointed in, we finally got this American driver with all this hype, and it just hasn't matched what we want from the sport, or from that experiment yet.
Yeah, I completely agree with that point. I think that he's not taking this opportunity, really running with it the way he should. And more so, I don't think Williams is taking this opportunity and running with it.
Right, exactly.
Williams can be doing a hell of a lot more to be promoting this American driver, and they're not doing anything. So how does that affect his psyche when he's just like, okay, I'm just here. Like, I'm just here for laughs, or, you know, whatever. It doesn't really seem like, it seems like, we know it's the Alex Albon team, but at the same time, I mean, like you said, he's 13th in the constructors, and yet his name is already being thrown around at Red Bull and Red Bull and Ferrari. And it's like, whoa, okay. 21 points. And that's, I guess that's the barrier to entry right there. It seems like a pretty low bar. No, no offense to Albon, I think he would be performing a lot better in a better car. He's done a lot with that Williams. But at the same time, it's like, you know, Williams can be doing a lot more too. And I don't think that, maybe, because you look at the way other teams hype up their drivers, there's always something going on. And it's just, they're very dry and very stale over at Williams. I don't know what to do. Like, I want to.
Yes, I think they're it's probably I would say it's somewhat of a, I'll call it a crisis, but you know, it's not owned by the Williams family anymore. They still have the Williams name. They are owned by, you know, a private equity firm. It's, I don't know. There's no soul. There's almost no soul there, right? Like they don't have that soul. And I feel for all the folks that work for the team, because it's like, man, they've definitely got the history and they've got the legacy. They've got that pedigree. I mean, they were one of the best. They still are. They are one of the best teams ever.
Yeah.
To compete in Formula One.
But right now, they have no culture.
Yeah.
Like, who are they? We know who Red Bull is. We know who Ferrari is. We know who Mercedes. We know who all these teams are. I mean, even Haas has or Steiner. We don't know who Williams is. And I think that is that needs to be their focus more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm right there with you. I think that there's got to be, you know, there's got to be something that they can do. I just don't know what it is yet. I hope they figure it out. I would love to see Williams back at the top. I would love to see Logan Sargeant doing a hell of a job like that. I don't want to see Logan Sargeant fail. I don't want to see any of these drivers fail.
There's more to the equation with Williams than, oh, Logan Sargeant's underperforming. There's so much more to the equation.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, that's definitely a great point where maybe there is more.
Yeah. Well.
Maybe there is more.
Question.
Yeah.
Have you seen Fernando Alonso's quote about the change in quality?
I did. I saw what he was kind of alluding to, and the radical proposition to fix the issues. I mean, first of all, let's say this: like, there's definitely an issue, right? It's like you've got these, and this was somebody made a good point. I saw this on Twitter, and it was spot on. There's just, these cars are too big for all of them to be out on Q1.
Mm-hmm.
Like 20 cars on track at the same time at different phases of their qualifying, right? Somebody's on out lap while someone's on out lap, or someone is aborting a lap while, you know, someone else going in for a flyer. Like that, it's just, are we sinking here? You know, are we thinking when we're doing this? Like, we want to change all this stuff, and we want to add using different tires per qualifying session, and we want to do all this, like, newer type ideas. But yet, something that's almost, like, so obvious is not being considered. And Fernando alluded to, I think he said straight up, there's only one option, he said, individual time trials.
Yeah.
And I completely 100% agree with him. I think that is the only way to ensure you're not going to get these interference issues and calls. It's just too, it's too much.
It's traffic. It's finding clean air. It's chaotic is what it is. And so he said, we have hybrid engines. We have a charge. We have to charge the battery. We have to cool the tire. So the only way to go forward is one lap.
Yeah.
It's like, he's not wrong.
One shot.
Yeah.
One shot. Just go for it. Yep.
I mean,
and you know what? You'll definitely get more. I mean, it'll eventually, you know, level out. Right. But you probably will get some interesting results.
Yeah.
With that, because anybody can turn in a great lap, you know, one great lap and get lucky, or, you know, kind of like, I don't know, anything. Again, you have one shot to make a great lap. It's not like, okay, I've got six or whatever. I've got three or four times I can go around and I can hit my lap, cool down. Let me catch slipstream and maybe get an extra couple tenths off. Like, no, just go out there, push, and that's it. You're done.
If, say, okay, just hypothetically, a lap is 3 minutes, okay? say each driver was given an out lap and then they got their qualifying lap. Say that was maybe a 6 minute block per driver. That would mm-hmm. take 2 hours to get through quali.
With a six minute.
Yeah. If they were allowed a full lap for the out lap and then the qualifying at 3 minutes, at three minutes a lap. That would.
Which it's not. We're looking at probably less than 5 minutes per driver realistically, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a long time. So if you're a driver kind of waiting for your turn, it's like, do you only have, say, 3 minutes or so in that out lap to warm up your tires and you know, get everything going. Is that fair too? Like who goes first?
I mean, does it really matter who goes first?
No, I don't think it does.
I guess the argument could be made, well, you know, then someone's going to, the person who goes last is going to get the most track evolution and rubber, but also the person who goes last may not be able to run. What if the session gets called for rain? You know, depending on what the rules are, obviously the rules would have to adjust, right? Like, hey, if the rain comes out and it's paused, it's not like it's a canceled session or whatever. You know, again, I don't know how they would do it, but I don't know. I can't see why it would be a negative thing, especially if it's done after a practice session.
My suggestion would be to have two drivers on track at the same time. Like basically how your standing is in the drivers would be your qualifying lineup.
Okay.
Like if it would be Max and Sergio, for example, on that first out lap and then on that first quali lap. I mean, that would cut it in half.
Right.
You wouldn't be dealing with the traffic, the dirty air, a little bit of dirty air.
I mean, that's fine.
Not that much.
So teammate, you're saying teammates go out?
I mean, they could take the lineup. Yeah, the lineup from the, you could either do the constructor's lineup or you could do the driver's standing lineup.
Yeah. I think.
Pin other teams against each other in quali.
Yeah, I mean, why not? That's not a terrible idea.
And then the grid wouldn't be like that lineup. It would be your lap time would be the grid. I think that would make for interesting races. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I like the idea of one shot.
Yeah.
Like you said, warm up the tires, get out there, and then it's one shot, one lap, like boom.
Yeah.
You have an out lap, and you have a lap. I like it. I mean, I'm all for it. I like the way some other, racing series have done it. There definitely seems like there could be a lot of just parity.
Yeah.
That we wouldn't get normally.
Well, the thing is, the cars have changed so much. Since wasn't the system implemented in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, something like that?
The current qualifying was, when was it actually put into effect? It was, well, for some reason, 2016 is sticking out in my head as the year. Let me keep looking.
As we're both,
I mean, listen, the cars were different, right? The cars were different even then. So,
yeah, it says
they are too big.
Being introduced in 2016. Okay,
2016. Yeah.
Okay, but then it says the current qualifying system was adopted in the 2006 season. What the? No one knows anything. Anyway, in any event, the cars have changed too much. They're way bigger. The engines have changed. Everything seems to have changed too much for them to still have the same qualifying format.
Yeah.
So,
and I mean, if we're going to talk about safety and we're going to talk about
better racing,
just general racing, I think you have more opportunities. So, okay, since 2006, they had Saturday afternoon knockout qualifying. In 2016, I think, is when they actually changed to where drivers are eliminated during the sessions instead of knocked out kind of at the end. So whatever, either way, it's been a while. Yeah. Right.
It's 2023. How much of the cars changed since the night, their night and day?
Oh, tremendously. Right. Oh. Tremendously. Like we've got cars that are just way too big.
Yeah.
We've got cars that are just way too big for the tracks they're on.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You know, I agree with
bad enough. So. Oh, I love it. I would, it's one of those changes where I'd love to see it.
Yeah, but
also, I'd love to see something different.
Yeah.
Doesn't ruin the essence of racing, right?
Yeah. But also it's less wear and tear on the cars. It's less stress on the engines. Like if something happens during that quali, they have a little while longer to work on the cars.
Yeah.
You know, I think that where it is right now, there's too much stress on the car. So do we want better racing on actual race day? And I think even the Lance Stroll, his accident in quali in Singapore, they say that he wasn't medically cleared, but I think it had more to do with the car.
Could have been. I thought they rebuilt like the whole chassis or something.
But at the same time, they might have rebuilt the whole chassis, but how was the car actually running? What were the diagnostics on that? Were they even, you know, going to be in a position where they could have competed? So
yeah,
there's that asterisk right now. Did Lance Stroll sit the race out because of injury? Did he sit it out, you know, because the car wasn't fully fixed, or a hybrid of both?
Yeah.
So
there's probably a little bit of both, yeah. Right? There's probably, and I mean, we don't have to use Lance Stroll as the beacon of what we think competitive drivers are, but yeah, there's things like that happen in quali suck, you know, because now you already got one less driver on the grid now come race day, and you know that sucks. But from a safety and from a perspective of, you know, let's actually see these cars drive fast. Like, let's see top speed. Go out there and just go balls to the wall for your session, and that's it. And then you're done. You know what? Like, let's see how good of a driver you are when you have one lap to make it happen. And,
yeah.
You know, it tests a lot more than just, you know, the car. It also, this will test the driver tremendously, right? You don't have the opportunity to make a single error in a one-shot quali.
Yeah.
None. You cannot make the slightest mistake. You know, Max is out there. Oh, man. Oh, I don't like this. The tire's this. I don't have grip on. Oh, too bad. You got to figure, you know.
Yeah.
You got one out lap to get it right. And that's it.
Figure out the rest before curfew, but you've got one lap. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm all for it. I would love to see something change.
We need to escalate this up the chain, because I think this is smart.
We need smaller cars.
Yeah.
Period. And I understand a lot of what's been done is for safety reasons, but you can still make these cars safe and not make them so damn big. Yeah.
They're huge.
They're too long.
Yeah, for sure.
They're too long.
Way too long.
They're too long, and they want to keep adding, you know, like street races to things. And it's like, well, that's not going to give you great racing, especially when you've got 20 cars on a qualifying session.
Yeah.
In a Monaco, how are you supposed to do, like, how is that supposed to work?
Yeah.
So unless the cars get smaller, unless, you know, we've been talking about that for a while, right? Cars getting smaller. But unless that happens, a one-shot quali is a great thing they could test. Yeah. So it would be such an easy, I think it'd be pretty easy to implement, and you're probably going to save quite a bit in cars not colliding or interfering. I mean, there's only benefits, at least in my initial kind of like
analysis.
Look at it. Yeah.
Well,
so that's my thought.
I'm here for it. We're going to escalate this up somewhere to some chain through someone. I think it would be smart, at least for one race. Let's experiment. Let's see what happens. And if the drivers like it, then great. If they don't, okay, fine. At least we tried. At least then the F1 and the FIA could say, okay, well, we're trying everything right now to make the sport better and to improve safety and to also not put teams in positions where they could crack up their cars and not have them be able to compete in the actual race itself.
Yeah.
So we can.
Yeah. I mean, having less cars on the grid because of things that were avoidable.
Yeah.
That's terrible. And again, this is the pinnacle of motorsport. So it's like, if we're going to try things for supposedly sustainability's sake, like, oh, we're going to use different tires for Q1, Q2, Q3. Why can't you give one shot quality an opportunity?
Yeah. Imagine the emissions that would reduce.
I would think it does, right?
That's got to be pretty sizable.
To go around in one shot instead of multiple laps for no reason.
Yeah. I like it.
I'm all for it. I like it. I'm with you.
That was a fun chat. We should do
that was good.
Sometime soon.
We should. It was good to be able to do it again. I'm glad that we bounced back. And for those of you listening, thanks for bearing with us. We've both had some life. Nothing bad, but just life. And you know, it's tough to get to record to the quality we want when you've got so much stuff going on. But we thank you all for sticking with us and asking for us to come back. That feels really good to hear that a lot of you wanted us back. So thank you.
It's always good hearing that. People like what you're doing, right?
Oh, yeah.
If you guys like this podcast, go ahead and rate us 5 stars. Leave a comment.
Comment.
Got to do.
Review. Let us know. Tweet at us. Whatever it is that you want to do to tell us how much you like it, we greatly appreciate that. And I'm Vincenzo Landino. You can find me at Vincenzo Landino on X, Twitter, whatever we're calling it now.
Twixer.
I know you can find VF at the VF Castro on the tweets or whatever we're calling it. And just interact with us, engage with us. We love it. We'll be back here again in the near future. I promise we're going to do it. Hopefully we'll have something to talk about. Hopefully we can get through this weekend in Japan with the hours of watching this race. Is going to be a very difficult weekend.
Isn't the first session in like 2 hours?
Tonight.
Yeah.
Tonight at 10:30 a.m.
9:30
Eastern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's wild.
10:30 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah. And then isn't the second one at like 1 a.m. on Friday?
Yeah. I'm not looking forward to the race. So my weekend will currently look like Ohio State plays at 7 on Saturday night. That game will end probably pretty late. The race is Sunday morning at 2 a.m. Eastern. And I cannot not watch the race live. Like, people are like, oh, just record it. I'm like, nah, I'm not recording a race to watch it after everyone's already seen it. Like, no way.
Yeah.
Way too many texts. Like, no. And then the Steelers, NFL, play at 8 o'clock on Sunday night. So from Saturday night to Sunday night, I've got 3, you know, big sporting events of things that I care deeply about that span pretty much the entire day of like, you know, schedule wise. So I'm not like exactly looking forward to
it. Is really
Monday morning
being a fan and a Formula One fan this time of year. It is brutal. Yeah. Especially I'm a USC fan, and Pac-12 after dark games sometimes go in 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. It's absurd.
Did you watch the Colorado State game the other night?
Yes.
I watched the whole thing, and it was like 2:30 a.m. Eastern when it ended. And I was just like, I cannot. And I couldn't go to sleep because it was good. Like, it just genuinely didn't want to turn it off. And I was like, wow, it's late.
Yeah,
that was bad.
It's a lot. Well, we hope that our listeners don't have the same problems that we have. We hope you guys get plenty of sleep this weekend.
Yeah.
But
get sleep, watch sports. Yay.
Have fun. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Ciao.
Thank you so much for tuning into the VF1 show. If you liked it, please don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And for previews of next week's show, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the VF Castro and Vincenzo Landino.